When it comes to saving the world from impending climate change doom, most politicians, or those that believe in climate change at least, would say that an emissions trading scheme is the way to go. But one former CSIRO economist believes that an emissions trading scheme will do nothing for the environment. Professor Clive Spash, now working for the Norwegian University of Life Sciences, wrote a paper on the topic last year, but it was controversially censored by the CSIRO. Reporter Paul Serratori asked him why he believed the scheme will fail.
Well, there's a range of different issues I cover in the paper, but fundamentally, part of the problem is that the structure of the market economy means that there are powerful vested interest groups in society, the large corporations, banking and financial sectors, which will take control of these mechanisms, that will manipulate them, will get the wealth transfers, will get free permits, and will make money out of these schemes, and who don't actually care that much about whether greenhouse gases are actually reduced as a result of this or not. Their primary concern is that they benefit from the scheme.
So basically, the ETS is all about making money.
For a lot of people, yes, it is. If you look at who are the advocates of the main advocates of the emissions trading schemes, they are the people who are going to be making large sums of money. And we're talking billions of Australian dollars here.
So you mentioned a little bit in your presentation that you did today. I was specifically interested in the fact that you were talking about how the finance and banking sectors could make money out of this. Could you explain a little bit about that?
Yeah, the financial banking sectors make money out of brokerage fees, out of giving advice to firms about how they can engage in emissions trading. And they also will make money out of investing in this offsets market, that is by setting up schemes in less developed countries, creating permits which they will then sell. So, for example, they may plant trees in a less developed country, in an area where there are very poor people. It's very cheap to do so, and then they can sell those on the open market and make massive profits out of it.
And you mentioned a little bit about the offset scheme in your presentation, specifically how you said how it could fix up the guilt that a lot of people in the first world will feel about doing things such as flying in an airplane. So with these offset schemes, do you think they're just playing on our guilt to make money?
Yeah, that's the in terms of the voluntary offset schemes, which are sold to individuals, such as the example I was using was airlines, which is very common now for people to sign up and buy carbon neutral, fly carbon neutral, so they buy some offsets. Those sorts of schemes are pinpointed at specifically people who feel guilty about flying. They're not aimed at people who are environmentalists who won't fly. They're not aimed at people who are skeptics who don't care. They're directly aimed at those middle range of people who are a bit concerned about it and who want to do something. And it's an easy option for them. It's cheap and it's easy, but it's not effective because nobody knows when they buy those permits exactly what's going to be done with the money. And who, when they sign on to an emissions carbon neutral flight, who actually pays any attention to where that money's going and what it's going to be doing?
So say I wanted to be a little bit more conscious of where my money went and decided to pay for one of these carbon neutral flights. What should I do to make sure that my flight is carbon neutral? Is there a way I can check?
I think it's extremely difficult for people to check up. This is another problem here, is how can you find out, for example, what is Qantas doing with their carbon neutral money? I'd like to know.
So then if we want to do something to reduce our carbon output, what should we be doing? How can we say, yes, we are making a difference in the world?
I think the first thing that we need to do is to pinpoint the major sources, the major industrial sources and the major sources in terms of our transport and production systems, and actually start aiming to reduce those. There's a whole range of different things that can be done here in terms of infrastructure change, in terms of increasing the quality of housing, in terms of energy efficiency, and changing the types of products we have, encouraging a renewable energy industry.
Say you were made Prime Minister tomorrow, what would be the first thing you do to set Australia on a low-carbon economy?
Well, I think that we have to actually start implementing all of those changes that I've just mentioned. We have to look at the infrastructure, the transportation sector, the building quality, and we have to actually start changing the regulations around that. In addition, we're going to have to be making a transition of the economy, so we have to have an open debate in society about what that transition of the economy means. Because a lot of the debate is about changing the way that we produce without fundamentally changing the system, that we maintain a material throughput rate, a consumption lifestyle, which is just not sustainable, and that the economy based around the fossil fuels, which can't be sustained. Now, we've got to have a major debate in society about what is the economy that we can sustain, because it certainly isn't this one.
You mentioned in there that a lot of reason we have climate skeptics is because there are a lot of people scared about how the way to combat climate change will affect their lifestyle. You said that we should be helping those people to understand that things are going to be okay in their future, that it's not going to be as economically bankrupt as they believe it's going to be. How do you get that message out there to the skeptics?
Well, I think the issue here is that there are sectors of the economy which are going to be fundamentally hit by a transition economy. So it's not a matter of telling people that it's going to be okay, that they can retrain simply and change their jobs, because some sectors are going to be hit very hard. And we saw this in the UK, for example, when the Thatcher government shut down the coal mining industry. They made hardly any allowance for retraining or the problems and social problems that people were going to be facing. So really, we need to actually be making allowances for this. Actually say, look, this community is heavily dependent on an industry which is going to have to go. Right? So what does that community then do? Well, there has to be a plan for what people can do as an alternative, how their future is going to develop, to give them hope and prospects. Not just to say, well, it's not really going to be that serious, it'll be okay. And then people know damn well that's not going to be the case, that they're going to be actually, their job could be on the line. So identifying the susceptible sectors, looking at how we can make a transition to a different economy.
That was Professor Clive Spash speaking to Paul Serratori.